Welcome to the Sleep Like a Boss podcast. If you're struggling with sleep and have tried everything that Google, your friends, or Facebook groups have recommended and you're still struggling, stop looking for that one thing to fix your sleep. The human body is complex and one single supplement or lifestyle fix is likely not going to be the solution. Here on the Sleep Like a Boss podcast, we dig into all aspects of sleep for you and unravel the complexity. My name is Annika Carroll. I'm the new CEO of Sleep Like a Boss, and me and my team are here to end the epidemic of sleep deprivation. Let's get started. Hi, everyone. Welcome to this week's episode of the Sleep Like a Boss podcast. We're going to talk all about anxiety today. And the ones of you who've been following me for a longer period of time know that I have a story with that, with insomnia, with burnout, with panic attacks and anxiety. So I'm super excited to have Dr. Tracy Potter today on the show. She is a functional medicine anxiety detective, and she has a PhD from UC Berkeley, and she's going to talk a little bit about her journey and her job. But she really is an expert in looking at anxiety, where it comes from, how to address it, how to solve it. And she's looking at it from a functional perspective and not so much from a Western medicine perspective. And that's why I'm so thankful to have you here, because I see so many women struggle with anxiety and sleep, with mood, with everything. So thank you so much for being here.
It's my pleasure.
Great.
Should we dive in? It's so fun to talk about anxiety. I can't wait.
Yeah, exactly. Let's dive in. And maybe tell us a little bit about your own journey and how this came about, what you're doing and why you're doing it now.
Okay, sure. So the great irony here is that my father was a psychiatrist, and I grew up working in his office and helping out. And then he would take me with him on rounds to see patients back before people talked a lot about boundaries. And so like, I was like an emotional support kid. I would go to the like psych wards and nursing homes, and I would meet some of his patients, and they would be so happy to meet me. And then this didn't end when I was a small child. It kind of continued into when I would go visit as an adult too, until he retired and then passed away. So, but I did grow up in the medical industry, like working in my dad's office. We had like a Zoloft scale, and we had, you know, Xanax pens, and we had notepad, like we would, you know, he would invite me to lunch with the pharmaceutical reps, you know, they're bringing fajitas or whatever. This was in San Antonio, Texas. So, so I grew up immersed in the medical field, and I was taught not to really question anything, and that anything natural or alternative was hoo-ha or woo-woo. And so when I was 19, I had my first panic attack. And what I realized now is that I was othering my dad's patients, like those people, like, you know, oh, those poor people, you know, and back then they would say, if you, you know, whatever psych issue a person had, including anxiety, that it was a genetic chemical imbalance. And thank goodness we have these medications. You just go on the medication and, you know, maybe go to talk therapy, and then that's it. Those are your solutions, you know? And, but then when I had this panic attack, something in me, I don't know, honestly, I think some of it was pride. Like, I didn't want to claim an identity around an anxiety disorder. It felt like a life sentence that I didn't want for myself. And so I was determined, and I was 19, and I was determined to figure something else out. My dad did offer me meds, but I just, something in me couldn't do it. Now, I want to be really careful to say, if you're on medication for anxiety, I'm not judging you. I don't think you're a failure or anything's wrong with you. Like, it's fine. What I want people to be aware of are the limitations of medications and the side effects, and the fact that they don't address root causes, the underlying causes. They don't fix the problem, right? So my favorite metaphor I use all the time, so pardon me if I keep saying it over and over again, but I really think it's important for people to understand this who haven't heard me speak before, is that anxiety, just like so many other symptoms, is a smoke alarm. And if your house is on fire and you just take the smoke alarm out of, I mean, sorry, if you just take the battery out of the smoke alarm, it'll stop the noise, but your house is still going to burn down. And so what I realized over many years in a very long journey healing my anxiety, the chronic anxiety, was that there's always some underlying cause of your anxiety that you can address. it's not just a genetic life sentence and medications are your only answer. And people get so mad on social media when I say this. And I think they're like, well, I just want to take a pill. I just want to say it's my genetics and take a pill. But for those of you who actually are willing to think differently and take action, what it takes to heal anxiety and fix your sleep are things you need anyway. They're things that are going to help you thrive and have an amazing life. So in the middle between having a dad as a psychiatrist, then starting panic attacks in college, then I eventually ended up in grad school. I became a medical anthropologist. Well, I participated in a medical anthropology program with UCSF Medical School and UC Berkeley. And one of the things I realized is that the reason we're so physically and mentally ill is that we're living in ways that don't work with our evolutionary biology. We did not evolve to eat junk and be exposed to all these toxic chemicals and to like have horrible sleep hygiene and lose our circadian rhythms and sit on our butts all day. And it just goes on and on and on, be breathing through our mouth all day. It just goes on and on and on, like all the things we've changed. And some of the things are super cool. Like technology can be so amazing. I'm not anti-technology, but we need to innovate in ways that work with and not against our biology and our psychology. And so that's really the core of my message, is coming home to the essence of who we are in the modern world. How do we navigate that? And I really learned a lot from looking at indigenous populations and how their health, mental and physical health has been devastated by colonization and by changes in their lifestyle. When they started living like us, they start getting the same diseases. I think most of us know this already. We've all heard this. We all have had the memo, right? But really specifically visiting communities and like Latin, like Mexico or Guatemala, or, you know, just studying and reading other ethnographies of people and how they're impacted. It was horrifying to me to read what's done to these people and then realize, like, you know, we're on the tail end of that ourselves, right? And so it's not either or. Like, we have to go like live in a forest in a loincloth, although that sounds cool if you're not, you know, if you don't get parasites. But like, how can we live in the modern world and still honor the deepest essence of what we are, so that we can create a culture of nurture instead of a culture of destruction and mental illness and chronic illness? So I want people to know, if you have anxiety, you're not defective or broken. You don't just have some bad genetics. Even if people in your family have mental health issues, it doesn't mean you're genetically determined to have anxiety. There are solutions. So that's what I'd like to talk about today. Be solutions oriented, but you have to be willing to do your part.
Yes. Yes, yes, yes. I'm so excited about this. And I think we are both examples of that, in terms of, yes, you can do that without medications. Because I remember, well, my doctor was like, yeah, you are not feeling well. There must be something going on. I don't really know. You're the pinnacle of health. He ran all the tests. Everything came back perfect. He's like, here's the prescription to see a psychiatrist. And at that time, because I'd had some trauma, I was like, well, yeah, probably can't hurt to talk to somebody. So I actually went, right? And did it get a lot better? Yeah, I'm not saying that wasn't one piece of the puzzle, right? But was the underlying issue still there? Yes. And did it keep coming back? And did it keep blowing up? Yeah. And then the psychiatrist was like, you're not on medication? I'm like, no, why? And at that point, I wasn't even part of the functional world. I was working in a corporate environment. So I had no clue about any of these things. But I was like, no, A, I was never asked by anybody. But in retrospect, I think that's great that my general physician didn't even think I should be going on meds, which I think was great, because who would have known what I would have done? And then the psychiatrist is like, yeah, do you want to go on meds? I'm like, you know what? No, I feel there's something else is wrong. Like, we're talking, I'm processing things. Some things are getting, but it's underlying, like, something is wrong. I can feel it, but I cannot tell you what it is. So we need to dig deeper, right? And I think, what do you think? What is it that people are missing, or that we should be looking for, to see what part of our, is it our physiology? Is it our environment? What is it that could be driving that anxiety?
Yeah. So I think one of the issues is first how we're thinking, right? Mm-hmm. Because thinking limits something called imaginal capacity. Our ability to find a solution is often, the solutions are often hiding in plain sight, because our thinking is limiting our ability to see them. And so there are a couple things. First, I like to use the metaphor of a combination lock. So if you just get one number right, it won't open, right? You have to get the right numbers in the right order, right? So people will be like, well, I tried this and it didn't work. Then I tried this. I got off gluten and that didn't work. And then I stopped caffeine and that didn't work. And then I, whatever, took probiotics and that didn't work. And then I, you know, and we really need to come at it from a systemic approach. We need to go through your whole system thoroughly and clean up all the messes so that you get everything working right. Like if your car has a bunch of mechanical issues, you don't go just pick one, fix one of them and then say, okay, why isn't my car running well? You know, you fix all the issues, right? Or you try to, if you can afford to, or at least, you know, the most salient ones, right? So what ends up happening with our bodies, we're even more complex, right? And so, cause we're dealing with our consciousness and we're dealing with our physiology, and we actually don't even have the right language for what we are and what our reality is. We talk about our mind and body like they're separate. We talk about psychology and biology like they're separate, and we don't have words that convey that our mind and body are the exact same thing. There is no separation. You know, like every thought not only creates physiological change, but is driven by your existing physiology. So, your mind and emotions and spirit and all that stuff, all the same thing. It's all the same reality, right? And so I came up with this program that, you know, it has three pillars. Ooh, what just happened? Anyway, it has three pillars that if we don't address all three of them, then we're not going to get the solutions we're looking for. So one of them is going to be lifestyle. So I already alluded to this. We're living in ways that don't work with our biology. Wait, did I lose you? Oh, sorry. Weird things are happening. I'm in an office where the light just went out and then your window just disappeared. Okay, here we are. Poltergeist. Okay. So anyway, so we're living in ways that we didn't evolve to live. So one of the first things I want to look to is build your foundation lifestyle first. And so people are like diet and exercise. Well, number one, the word diet is so loaded and it has the word die in it, as people have pointed out. It takes away something that's very natural about it, the pleasure of it, right? So we need to live in ways that give us pleasure. So I teach us something called healthy hedonism. And that's where we basically, instead of having destructive pleasures in our lives, like alcohol and sugar and things like that, we find non-destructive pleasures, things that give us pleasure, that work with our innate biology, that make us feel good, like really healthy food that's still delicious and yummy, and forms of movement that are joyful and playful, getting good sleep, snuggles and hugs, good friendships, community, connection, time outdoors in nature, like all these things that we're taught to put last. And we're not taught to invest in our self-care. So now we talk about self-care. We're like, you need good self-care, but you also need to work like 80 hours a week and sacrifice yourself for everyone else. So like finding ways to actually rebel against that in a level-headed way and change how we're living and thinking and how we set up our day-to-day existence. So to me, our lifestyle isn't just diet and exercise. Mm-hmm. It's our daily thoughts and actions and environment. So our habits of how we sit, like if you're like this all the time, that changes your biology and your neurology, right? Like how you sit, how you breathe, your thoughts, your relationships. So your environment is your physical environment. Like, do you have mold you're getting exposed to, heavy metals, you know, like toxic chemicals. So that's your environment. But your environment's also social and emotional. So the people you surround yourself with and your relationships, right? So that's pretty in-depth work as it is, right? And so cleaning that up is super important, but you can only do it a little at a time or you'll get overwhelmed. So it's making changes that feel good at a digestible rate, but in ways where you get quick wins. So you feel so much better that then you have the wherewithal to make the next changes, right? So the pillar one is just going to be how you're living your lifestyle. I call it a lifestyle makeover because who doesn't love a good makeover, right? Secondly is, you know, the functional health part. That's the advanced labs, the functional labs and the supplements and things like that. But a lot of people think, oh, I'm just going to run labs and take supplements. But if you don't change how you're living and thinking, then you're never going to get well, right? And so, and there's so many things that cause anxiety. Anything that causes inflammation of your brain and nervous system will cause anxiety and depression. and other mental disorders. If it's more severe imbalance, you'll get more severe psychosis, right? So it's really important. And when you're trying to tell people who have anxiety or depression to just change your thinking, just think positive or whatever. And if it's being physiologically driven, biologically driven, yeah, that helps, but it's not going to fix it. So if you're hyperthyroid and you don't know it, and that's driving your anxiety, you're going to feel anxious till you fix your thyroid. If you're hypothyroid, you have an autoimmune disease of the thyroid, you have Hashimoto's, and you're making autoantibodies against your brain, you're going to have anxiety and depression or some combination of those. And until you fix your Hashimoto's and you get those antibodies down, then, you know, you're going to continue to be anxious. And you're also probably going to have trouble sleeping and be exhausted all the time and not be able to function. And that will drive anxiety because you can't function in life, right? So the sickness drives more anxiety. So there are illnesses that cause anxiety, but then the very inability to function and being sick and scared drives anxiety, right? So it's like you get in this like downward spiral and you really want to be in an upward spiral, right? So gut issues, parasites, infections. Like I remember I accidentally got exposed to food sensitivity, casein, albumin. So a lot of people think dairy is just a lactose issue, but there are proteins in milk like casein and albumin, especially like in American cow milk, like the A1 protein, as opposed to the A2 that we find in goat, sheep, and buffalo milk. And some people, it's all dairy. But a lot of people, this will cause inflammation in the brain, the gut and the brain. If you have inflammation in your gut, you got it in your brain. So like I got exposed to cow dairy without realizing it at a restaurant. And what was interesting was that I noticed the next day feeling like really like negative about life. Like I was seeing life through this really negative prism. And well, I did get tummy bloating that day. I got really bloated and I felt yuck. And I was like, ugh. And then the next day when I'd kind of forgotten about it, and this is the issue, is the inflammation usually is hours later or the next day. And so you don't associate the cause and effect. That's the tricky part. That's why you might need a detective. But is like, you know, the next day I was just like feeling so negative and worried and anxious and blah. And then I was like, okay, I need to meditate. And so I just stopped, did my breathing. I have breath work practices I teach and do that I think are super important. I'll get to that in the third pillar. And then I just got myself centered. And that still small voice of intuition we all have, if we make space and listen to it, told me, you have casein poisoning. And I was like, oh, like the whole filter through which I'm seeing reality is being changed by a food I ate yesterday. And once it cleared out of my system, I took some enzymes. And once it cleared out of my system, I was back to like seeing the world the way I like to see the world, which is like much more empowered and uplifted. So that was just one food exposure. Now imagine if you're eating those foods all the time, every day, you know, and I hate to say it guys, but really there's so much misunderstanding around the whole gluten thing. People think, oh, like if you don't have obvious gut symptoms after you eat gluten, it's not super obvious, then you don't have a problem. And then a lot of the food sensitivity tests aren't very accurate. And so I really only trust the ones that test literally every peptide in gluten and other compounds in wheat that aren't even gluten that can trigger issues. So like, I personally like the Vibrant Gut Wheat Zoomer. The name is ridiculous though, but I like that one. But also like if someone is having anxiety and autoimmunity or chronic illness or whatever, like I really think it's important to understand that gluten has, it triggers a production of a protein called zonulin, and zonulin basically erodes the intestinal lining. It breaks down the tight junctions or the molecular bonds that seal your gut lining up tight. So you don't, you know, have leaky gut. So when you have leaky gut, you end up with leaky brain, you end up with anxiety, you end up with depression, brain fog, fatigue. So I like to say all these symptoms are how your brain says, ouch. Because your brain doesn't say ouch like when you put your hand on a hot stove. Your brain says ouch with anxiety, with depression, with brain fog, with, you know, with fatigue, with just blah, like you can't function, feeling sad, feeling moody, feeling irritable, grumpy, having a negative outlook on life, struggling to feel hope. Remember, because we make like 50% of our dopamine and 90% of our serotonin in our intestinal cells. Those intestinal cells will not make those compounds if they're not being chemically signaled by very specific bacteria that we can kill with antibiotics. So if you've had a history of antibiotics, that can mess up your neurotransmitters. Now, I want to clarify, anxiety and depression aren't caused by low serotonin, blah, 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 but those do affect your mood and your functionality, your brain function and things like that. So it's a little more complex than what we've been taught. So anyway, as you can see, it can get a little complicated because you need to rule out environmental toxins. Oh, metal fillings, huge trigger of panic attacks and chronic fatigue, and even will cause thyroid disease and thyroid autoimmunity. So really what a lot of this boils down to is heal your gut, detoxify, but in an intelligent way. Because a lot of people are like, I'm on a juice cleanse, I'm on a detox. And they just go to the grocery store, the health food store, and buy these things that are making all these claims. And they're not done really in a way that works or that can trigger backlash. So it's really important to get help from people who can help you navigate this realm, right? And so this is the part, you know, can be a lot for a person to be like, okay, I'm supposed to like really upgrade my lifestyle and I'm so busy and I feel like crap as it is. And then I'm supposed to go figure out like all these things that are happening in my body and figure out which ones are on top. Oh, hormones, like the majority, I don't know about you, but the majority of my clients are middle-aged women who are perimenopausal or recently went through menopause or went through menopause and never got their health back after menopause, because that's just such a strain on the body. And we have so many environmental toxins that really mess up our estrogen, put in dirty estrogens or toxic estrogens, and like block the production of our other hormones. We're also so stressed out. So when we go through menopause, we're supposed to pass off the production of estrogen from our ovaries to our adrenal glands. And if we're stressed out, that's not going to happen. It's also going to affect our testosterone. Men, this will affect you too. And so, yeah, so it's, I'm rambling a lot here, but it's like, this is a big, it's a puzzle. And some people's puzzle is like those little toddler ones with like five pieces and the little knobs on them, you know, like they can put together really easily. But some people's puzzle is like, you know, hundreds of pieces, but it's doable. You just have to be patient and methodical and strategic, right? So yeah. So I'll let you say something if you want, and then I'll get on to my third pillar.
No, I think that's, and that might sound overwhelming, but I think that's from a functional perspective, that's exactly how we work, right? And that is where the Western medicine often ends way before that. Like your blood work looks fine. Right. And we're like, no, we look at different things. We look at things that we might not see in blood, or we look at different ranges in the blood work to see where is something off. And like the gluten, I think, is really not to be underestimated. And I'm somebody, I have a casein problem, and I always thought it was lactose. And then I drank lactose-free milk and my problems didn't go away. And then somebody said, you know, there's other things in cow milk than lactose. And once I took those out, once I took the gluten out, your system could heal and you're not constantly pouring oil in the fire, right? Because that's the other thing.
Right.
Really taking that, and that might sound overwhelming for people, but like the one thing is really, like you said, do it strategically with somebody who has a plan and a process and a system. The other thing is really just start somewhere, because you're going to feel improvement very quickly. And then you have the energy eventually to look at the other puzzle pieces. Right. That's the thing. Right. We don't look at 200 puzzle pieces at once. Like you said, we're going to do it step by step and see how you do and adjust and correct and move forward. So you're feeling better.
Right. And give you wins up front, like give you wins right away. Like there's, and that's why one of the first things I like to give people, even though I'm saying this last, is the nervous system reprogramming or rewiring. I don't like reprogramming because people are like, that sounds like brainwashing. Although I do like to make brainwashing jokes. I'm like, our brains are dirty. We need them. But anyway, our nervous system rewiring, because we can, because of the glory of neuroplasticity, we can rewire our brains. It's so cool. There's like neurofeedback, which is amazing. And more interest is covering neurofeedback now, which is so amazing. And, but there are also just daily practices, like simple breathwork practices that change our mitochondria, like the energy production centers of our cell, but also rewire our brains so that the parts of our brains that are overdeveloped from trauma start to rebalance and the parts that are underdeveloped from trauma start to redevelop. It's pretty freaking cool. Like how 5 minutes of breathwork a day can change your brain structures. The structures in your brains. It's really incredible. And then the practice of meditation. I'm a huge proponent of meditation. I understand people are like, I suck at meditation. I'm like, you just haven't been giving tools that are doable for you. And people think they're uniquely messed up because they close their eyes, try to meditate, and their thoughts are like, blah, 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 blah. And I'm like, yeah, that's you and everybody. And guess what? That's blah, 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 blah. That's going all the time. You're just like so used to it. It's like background noise. But have you ever like, you know, when you're in, turn the fan on, the ventilator fan in the kitchen, you turn it on and then you kind of, it's on and you kind of forget about it, but then you turn it off and your whole nervous system goes, ooh,
yeah.
Yeah. And then you're just like, oh, see, that's my metaphor for meditation. When you get a practice and you have the breathing tools will catapult you into a state of meditation. So if you try to just sit down and meditate without structure or training or tools, then it's probably going to be pretty unpleasant. But if you have breathing practices or ways you can focus either your eyes or your attention, your breath, in your body, you can focus in your body in different ways. There are different strategies for where you put your focus. You give your mind a job, so it's not just wandering around like, you know, and then you can actually feel very quickly start to feel like deep peace and euphoria, even if you've never meditated before in your life. Like I have, that's why on my website, I have a free gift. That's a meditation that takes 15 minutes, completely shifts everything. It was actually developed by, Peter Levine and Maggie Phillips, both PhDs, trauma experts. It was designed for physical pain, but, it works really well for emotional pain, and anxiety is a form of that, right? So it helps with anxiety, physical pain, emotional pain, but then, and we'll get into this in a minute, but like, it actually helps people sleep, like who can't sleep. Like, and so this was an accidental finding from my clients who were practicing it at bedtime. And then they were having trouble falling asleep. They would do it at bedtime and they would fall asleep before they even got through. They'd be like 5 minutes in, knocked out. They'd wake up in the middle of the night with insomnia, do it again, because they'd memorized how. It's really easy. Once you learn, you don't need the recording. And then they would just do it. And before they even got 5 minutes in, they would fall asleep. So there can be causes of insomnia that aren't addressed by this, but this was like, became this accidental, amazing insomnia tool, was this meditation. And it's a technique called pendulation. And so, and it's a somatic thing. It's really getting in your body, feeling your body. And it's a very, very specific technique that's amazing. So what I'm trying to say with all this is our approach has to be top down and bottom up. So the top down is changing your thinking and shifting your consciousness, because our consciousness drives our biology. It shapes our biology. It shapes the structures of our body, the proteins that get synthesized, how our brains get neurologically wired. So that top-down work has to be done. But if you don't do the bottom-up, which is like what we're creating with our nutrition and, you know, like healing, you know, hidden health issues that, you know, your blood work may look normal, but they're still there, because you just have to understand that the medical system only teaches doctors to run certain sets of panel. It's over-focused on, you know, I mean, we do need to focus on metabolic syndrome, like diabetes, kidney disease, liver disease, heart disease. Absolutely, those things need attention, but then the kind of the buck stops there, and they miss, there's almost no training. You talked, a lot of my clients are actually physicians or medical professionals. And, you know, and if you're a medical professional, you know this, there's almost zilch training on environmental toxins. There's almost zero training on how to recondition a gut or microbiome. So it's just like, it's just not taught in medical school, but there's all the sciences there, all the sciences there. And it's taught in functional medicine trainings, but it's not taught in conventional medicine. So, you know, and there's of course a huge political tie. One of the things I really studied in medical anthropology was the politics of medicine and how what we think and believe and what gets prioritized and the standards of practice by the American Medical Association are all driven by profit, unfortunately. You know, you want to keep people alive, you don't want to kill them, but you want to make them good customers. So if you have chronically ill people propped up on a lot of different medications, that's way more profitable than if you have a bunch of healthy, happy people, right? And so it's not a conspiracy theory, it's just business.
Absolutely. And so what do you think, if we now kind of look into the sleep area,
absolutely,
what's the connection there between anxiety, maybe also some of these hidden causes, and sleep, or people not being able to sleep?
Right. It's a vicious cycle, right? So the same things that drive insomnia drive anxiety and vice versa. So like if you have neuroinflammation, if you have inflammation of the brain and nervous system, and your brain is like, something's wrong, something's wrong, something's wrong, you can't sleep. And you're anxious. It's both. It's like you're overactivated. You're not at peace. You can't rest. Your brain's not calming down and turning off. Also, circadian rhythms, right? Like, and I know like you've probably had a bazillion people talk about this. I know you do. So like, this is a way we've moved away from our evolutionary biology, where we, you know, we lived with the sun, the cycles of the earth. And then now we have indoor lighting with all these weird, you know, blue and green lights, and our brains are like, WTF, what's going on, you know? So, you know, and then if you eat foods that are causing inflammation and of the brain, then you're going to have trouble sleeping. If you're not taking care of yourself, if you're in toxic relationships and you're worrying. So it's just really to heal our anxiety, to heal our insomnia, we have to heal our lives. We have to heal our bodies. And I like to say from cell to soul, like you have to do all the layers, right? And so a lot of the same things that cause anxiety cause insomnia. And then so that means a lot of the same solutions, you know? So they're shared solutions. So if you do the things you need to do to heal the anxiety, you will likely start sleeping well again.
Yeah.
And for example, you know, sometimes when I tell people about gluten or cow dairy or refined sugar, I'm like, well, people aren't going to want to talk to me ever again, because, and then alcohol and caffeine. I'm sorry, guys, but this is why we need healthy hedonism, because people think, oh, well, that's all the pleasure in my life. Like cheese and bread and alcohol and caffeine. Like if I don't have those things, I might as well not live. What's the point? And you know what? If that's all the pleasure you have in your life, if that's all that's giving your life meaning or reward, that means that's an invitation to reassess everything about your life and how you're thinking and how you're setting up your world. It doesn't mean, you know, if there's someone that all they do, like I have this fictional guy, his name is Fred, and he eats Oscar Mayer wieners and Cheez-Its and like drinks beer and Gatorade and soda and, you know, and like, you know, eats a bunch of sugar and junk food and candy. So if someone tells Fred to stop gluten, dairy, sugar, alcohol, caffeine, whatever, he's going to feel like his whole world got taken away.
Yeah. What's he going to live
off? Guess what? Right? Yes. What's he going to live off of? Like, how is he going to live? You got to die of something, right? So you might as well just keep doing what you've been doing. Right. And we do have our lower brain is like, do what is familiar. You're not dead yet. This must be working. Your higher brain is like, I want to thrive. I want to learn. I want to grow. I want to do new things. So we have these brains that have these different agendas where we're kind of split inside. Right. And so to really get that primal brain on board with the more evolved strategies, there's a technique there. That's part of coaching. That's part of why we need help to do that. Right. So we have to make our world bigger. There are thousands and thousands of delicious, yummy foods that are really, really good for us. Why do we fetishize these few things that make us sick and make us miserable? Because we've had all this cultural messaging through advertisements. We've had it modeled on TV. You watch TV and people are like, I had a bad day. I need a drink. I fought with my boyfriend. I need a drink. I need a drink. I need to like eat a bunch of ice cream because that's going to cause inflammation of your brain. And tomorrow you're going to wake up and you're going to hate your life even worse. Like, is that really what you want to do with your precious gift of a human life, is poison your brain every day and then feel like you're like condemned to suffer for all of eternity and that the world's a horrible, bad place? Or do you want to be like, I'm precious. I'm a beautiful human. Like I have this gift of a human life and I want to nurture it and nourish it. I want to find pleasures that not only feel good now, but they feel good tomorrow and the next day and decades and years into the future. I want to build my pleasure palette. I want to diversify all the ways I get pleasure with essential oils and with yummy herbal teas and with yummy smells and beautiful things and nature and fluffy, cute animals and wonderful friends that are loyal and beautiful that I can feel authentic and emotionally naked with. And I still feel held and accepted. I want to I want to reach for a life that is not toxic. I want to use things that are natural, and the natural things actually smell better and it feels better to use them. And like there's an intrinsic pleasure to taking care of ourselves. When we live in alignment with our evolutionary biology, we honor the deepest essence of what we are. Our bodies respond with a level of pleasure that is so much bigger than what we get from caffeine, that what we get in energy and life force. It's so much bigger than anything you've ever gotten from caffeine or sugar, or, you know, you can eat gluten-free pizza with a different kind of cheese that doesn't mess up your brain. You can still have desserts. You can still have, you know, yummy beverages. You can still have rituals. I always say, you know, keep the ritual and sub the substance. So instead of caffeine, you have something else. Now, I do want to say you have to wean off caffeine, but caffeine is like liquid anxiety insomnia. Yeah. It's like saying never go to sleep ever, you know, and be really nervous and activated. And there's some people that
especially yeah. Caffeine is something where I would say if you have that anxiety combination in there, if you're somebody who just has trouble sleeping, yeah, maybe move it forward like 11 a.m., no more caffeine after. But if you are anxious, really please take it out for a while and slowly wind, like replace some of it with decaf and then slowly come off. Don't, I had a
wean,
client,
yeah.
She was highly addicted to sugar and caffeine, and she dropped everything in one go. Now that weekend was not fun. Like, don't do that. You your body
cold
also
turkey
changes, right? Yeah. Like with the cravings, yeah. People, once we work with them, they're like, you know what? You're right. My cravings are gone and I'm starting to like these foods. Right. Yes, your palate changes. Yeah. Your microbiome changes. Your body is going to start seeing the benefit of that food, and you're starting to like these, because who's dates and almonds and all these things are great in combination. You can put cacao in there. Like, you can make chocolate things, right? You can have all these things. You just need to do it the right way.
Right. And even there's some people, I've been like, I do want to say, and I'm going to make people, hey, by the end of this interview, people are going to think I'm no fun, but I'm really lots of fun. But there was a time I couldn't even eat chocolate because it would give me anxiety because it has caffeine in it. Yeah, it's a stimulant. And then eventually healing my nervous system and my gut and stuff like that, I got to a point where in moderation, but you know what? I don't even care about it anymore. I care about other things. Like, you know what? One thing about having a consistent meditation practice is I've gotten to the point, not right away, but eventually, where I feel like at one with all of existence. Like, I feel the sense of oneness and profound, infinite, unconditional love that is so much better than even chocolate or, you know, what I call the cheap thrills. And I'm not anti-chocolate, by the way, let's just be clear on that. I just use good sweeteners, and you may need a break until you heal yourself before your nervous system can handle a little bit here and there. But also this, I have to have this thing and it's my only source of pleasure, that goes out the window. And, you know, I jokingly call a lot of the things we fetishize cheap thrills, because it's like we want these hyper palatable, hyper stimulating experiences with our phones, with, you know, with food, with all these substances that, you know, and even recreational drugs that give us this, like this big experience or whatever. And what ends up happening is we start becoming anhedonic, meaning we can't experience pleasure because our dopamine receptors get messed up, and it actually takes more and more stimulus to experience the same amount of pleasure. And it gets to where it's harder and harder. We become depressed and anxious because we can't, you know, sometimes we need to just be still and understimulated. Sometimes we just need to like look at a flower or look at a bee pollinating a flower, you know, and just be still. And, you know, music is a powerful tool for calming your nervous system. So there are all these things we can do. We can become the artist of our lives. So we can start crafting a life that's beautiful and loving and soothing, where we create a feeling of safety. Our bodies feel safe. Our cells feel safe. And so we create a life that's nurturing and nourishing. We create a culture of nurture instead of a culture of self-destruction. And we find people, we start to magnetize people into our world who are supportive. Like when I first started, I was the big weirdo, and like people thought I was insane, although they loved my cooking. They're like, Tracy's making hippie food. Let's go. You know, they didn't want to be healthy. They just like my food. I'm a good cook anyway. And so, but I had to learn that. I didn't grow up knowing how to cook delicious, healthy food. I just got really into like Indian food and type. I'm like, how can I make that at home with healthy ingredients? So I love making food from all over the world, African food. I have friends from a lot of different countries that have taught me things. So I like being really global in the kitchen. That's a way to make it super fun. And it's not as hard as you think. I like to tell people, just pick one new recipe a week. That's something that like turns you on. You know, I call it food porn, like find things that light you up and turn you on that are made with good quality ingredients. I teach people how to balance their nutrients, so you don't have to like track your macros on an app or everything. I teach people like they can learn in about 15 minutes how to balance a meal where you never have to track your macros again. So, you know, I want to teach people really innate, intuitive ways to live your life, so you're not dependent on some external thing to always, you know, tell you what to do. So when you become the artist of your life, you create this beautiful life, you're able to have practices daily that balance your neurology, that restructure your brain away from trauma. I'm still a huge proponent of working with therapists who do things like internal family systems. Huge fan of internal family systems. Huge, cannot say enough about parts work therapy and like getting all the parts of you in harmony with each other. And it creates this profound self-love and an ability to love others and yourself. Like very few other things can give you. I also am a huge proponent of anything somatic experiencing, EMDR, brain spotting. So I encourage people to find therapists who do the internal family systems, along with some kind of somatic work where you're working with your body, you're being embodied. Also, there are body workers who actually can talk you through processes while they're working on you, doing body work, acupuncture, things like that. So I love all these adjunct therapies that help. But again, all the therapy in the world, even all the meditation in the world won't work if you're not taking care of yourself, if your lifestyle is a mess, or if, you know, you have these hidden health issues you're not dealing with. So that's why I don't mean to overwhelm you, but that's why it's important to have, you know, have helpers, kind of like doulas, you know, to help you through a process in a way that's digestible and doable, so it can become fun. That's the thing. I like it to be fun and enjoyable, not overwhelming and miserable. And it's important. That's why I've created my program where you get wins up front. You start feeling better right away, like within the first like session, and then within the first week or two, I'm sure working with you, same thing. You start feeling better so quickly, and it feels so exhilarating. You're like, yeah, oh my God, I'm so much better. Now you're on to the next thing and the next thing. So, because you have to get wins. And so many of you have been beating your head against the wall with dieting, with like trying to take care of everybody but yourself, or trying to fit yourself in spite of everything else. And like, and it's hard to see the picture from inside the frame. That's the saying I love. And so having someone else help you look at your life and find ways where you have wiggle, so you could, it's like you're in the straitjacket, stuck in this life that's miserable, and a nervous system that's miserable, and you can't sleep, and you're exhausted, and you're overwhelmed, and someone's telling you to make all these changes, like that's too much, right? So the first thing you do is you just kind of loosen up the straitjacket, so you have a little wiggle. Now you can do more things. Now you can, and then eventually, like, you free yourself, and now you're like, woohoo, wellness, like, it just came back on, probably because I moved my arms. Anyway, so, you know, it's really crucial to do things in a way where you're constantly getting positive feedback so that you feel motivated to keep doing it. And you have to start where you are. You can't think I'm going to go from here all the way to over there in one shot, in one leap. You can't. You just start tiny and little with what you can do. And then that opens up energy and flexibility and you know, to be able to do the next thing.
Absolutely.
And I don't know if we fully address, but the anxiety and the insomnia, I just want to be clear, they go hand in hand. And I do want to be specific. I found that ashwagandha, there's this trilogy I really like. I don't know about you, and I'm open to your suggestions too, but this is a whole can of worms that we don't have time for, but I'm personally not a fan of taking melatonin. Just because of the impact on your hormones, it can deplete your dopamine, which will affect, cause depression, yeah, anxiety. It does really weird things in animal studies, like it shrinks hamster testicles. I heard Andrew Huberman talking about that. He's like, after I saw that in a lab, he's like, they went from the size of almonds to the size of a grain of rice. He's like, I'm never taking that again. But it, you know, and it's also tied to the loss of the pigmentation of your retina. It can basically increase risk of vision loss as we age and blindness as we age. So that's something I learned doing a deep dive on macular degeneration for my mom. So it's hormone replacement therapy. So I'm not saying no one can ever take it. Like if you had cancer or if, you know, your body's really not making enough, that's one thing, but all it does is help you fall asleep. It doesn't help you stay asleep. So what I really like is to support you making your own melatonin, like DIY it. So, you know, with the light stuff, you know, getting glasses that block, you know, the red and green light at night, you know, getting off electronics when you can, but also, in terms of supplements, I like any magnesium that crosses the blood-brain barrier. So I like magnesium 3-in-8. I also like magnesium from upgraded formulas, the nano magnesium, the upgraded magnesium. So some form of magnesium that gets to your brain with ashwagandha, which you may need to shop around with adaptogens. I find with highly sensitive people that have anxiety, ashwagandha tends to be one of the most best tolerated ones. Rhodiola can be good, but some people get rebound anxiety with that, or with it, just, you have to kind of see what your body tolerates. But I think ashwagandha I just find to be generally well tolerated to help kind of keep your cortisol lowering at night instead of spiking. And then even in the morning, if you wake up with morning anxiety, which I did for years, where you wake up and you're like, scared of the world. Mm-hmm. Ashwagandha can help kind of help retrain those circadian rhythms, right? And then also cannabis. I'm a big fan of responsible use of high quality medical cannabis. That's usually going to be like a higher CBD, lower THC, Not smoking. You can use a dry vaporizer or just, I like a tincture, an MCT oil. You take a few drops, go to bed, and you may have to find the right strain for you. But I've noticed for people who are really struggling, if you do the circadian rhythms and you do the, that brain retraining, the pendulation meditation I told you about, and you take those three supplements, most people, unless you have something really severe and off or whatever, there might be other layers. I can't say this works for everybody, but that tends to work for most people. And then as everything changes and heals, you may not even need those things anymore, but just to kind of get your brain retrained and get your nervous system retrained, those can be helpful tools. But again, you have to do the other work too. You can't just rely on some supplements and pills to fix it for you. You've got to do the other layers.
Absolutely. Otherwise it won't work. And I think with the CBD, I often see people having like hangovers or from it, or waking up in the middle of the night feeling woozy, and then they don't like that. I agree. Melatonin, mm-hmm. I find often for most people, it doesn't even work. The falling asleep doesn't even work with
right.
For a lot of people. The other one that I sometimes like with anxiety that I find works well also is passion flower tincture. Mm-hmm. I like it, the tincture, like don't, the tea won't cut it, but the, like if you get a really good, great tincture and you have to kind of play a little with dosing, mm-hmm. That often works too. Yeah, because we need
Do you have people take little breaks
on?
Oh, I'm sorry. Do you have people take little breaks from like adaptogens or, you know, thing just to kind of reset the receptor sites so that it keeps working?
Yeah, I try to even not start with them necessarily, depending on where we're at. Right. And I don't, yeah. And my goal is ideally never to have people on anything long-term, like a magnesium or something right. like that, or an omega or something like that is a different, but even adaptogens, right. My goal would not be to have people on them long-term, because I agree, eventually right. they might stop working. If you have a thyroid issue, I might not want you on ashwagandha yeah. all the time either.
Right, right. That is a good point, yeah.
So, yes, as tools to help, how could we say that? Like it help us support
help you get
your
unstuck.
Journey temporarily
yeah.
while we're fixing your gut, while we're working on your adrenals, while we're working right. on mitochondria, so right. that eventually right. you can come off and your body says, okay, I can do this now. I'm making neurotransmitters. Yeah. I'm doing all this stuff. And if I don't,
I'm a big girl now.
Yeah, exactly. And if I'm struggling again, I've learned methods also, like you said, right? Like how to nourish myself, how to nurture myself in terms of stress management, so that I won't fall back into that trap and I can get myself
correct. Yeah.
corrected quickly.
And one thing I did want to say, just because I totally agree, like I once, someone gave me like a CBD as a gift, or like, I think it was in a health food store, and the guy's like, here's a free sample. And that specific CBD gave me anxiety.
Mm-hmm.
Like, and so like there was a rebound anxiety, whereas there's another strain of cannabis with THC that I was microdosing. Like I'm talking about 1 to 3 drops. I see people take a whole dropper full of this stuff. And it's like, or like, you don't even know what's in it. So this is stuff that like, I knew the growers, they made it. It was like homemade tincture with the growers, people who knew what they were doing, and literally 1 to 3 drops, maybe maximum 5 drops. So you're not like stoned or like woozy or whatever. I see people that's why sometimes I'm even hesitant to bring up things like microdosing different things, because people tend to overdo it. And if you're a highly sensitive person, which a lot of our clients are, just a light touch, your body needs only a hint. Your body doesn't need to be shoved and pushed. Yeah. You probably have enough trauma that made you feel shoved and pushed. You want to like, atta girl, you can do it. Yay, you got this. Like, here's a little help. I love you. You know, you don't want like, come on, go to sleep, you dummy. You know, you don't want that.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's exactly, because all that can then just cause more stress. And then we're not breaking that cycle, right?
Exactly. Because really you want to show your body it's capable, what it's capable of. And a lot of you may have lost trust in your body, but I guarantee you all these symptoms you're having, they're, your body is your best friend. It's telling you something's wrong that you need nurture. And so it's not betraying you. Your body would be betraying you if it didn't let you know something was wrong. So if you're having trouble sleeping, you're anxious, you're fatigued, you're tired, you feel like crap, that's your body telling you it wants more love and that you need help.
Yes. And I think the one thing is, exactly what you said, is that it wants love. And it just, if we look at it from a sleep perspective, the body needs to feel safe to let go, to fall asleep. If it is technically that simple, and that can sound so frustrating, but it's sometimes, right? And then we look at the anxiety, and people are like, how am I? Safety is like the word that I'm like furthest away from right now because I'm so anxious. Yes, right, but then if you look at what drives your anxiety, all we've talked about, right? It can be your environment. It can be your gut. It can, yes, can it be stress and trauma? For sure. It's part, likely part of somebody's
It's all
trauma.
Of it.
It's all of it. And then you can feel safe. So just working on the anxiety for therapy will make you feel a little safer, but it often doesn't get that body back into that balance, or even into that extra, that'd be great, that you have that safety and that your mind is calm, your system is calm, and it can just say, okay, I'm happy, I'm safe. And because I'm safe, I'm not anxious, and I can sleep.
Right. So true. And I like just to wrap it up, I like the metaphor of allostatic load is a fancy word for like all the stressors your body's trying to handle at once. So I call it your bucket of tolerance, and we all have different buckets, but it's like you have this bucket of things your body can handle without falling apart mentally and physically, because it's all the same. And when we fill up that bucket with all these different things, the health issues, the environmental things, the emotional things, psychological things, like anything that can, it starts to spill over. And when your bucket spills over, you fall apart. So we just start emptying your bucket a little at a time, a little at a time, so that your body now has the wherewithal to heal. And then you ultimately want to thrive. You don't want to survive. You want to thrive. And so that's what we're here to help you do.
Yeah. Thank you so much. Where can people find you?
You can find me at innergeniushealth.com. INNER. Inner genius. It's the genius of nature that is inside of you. So that's why branded as Inner Genius Health, because we are nature. It's not something outside of us. And the nature's genius and the genius of nature is in every cell of our microbe and human cells. So wait, I don't know. But anyway, it's your inner genius is the intelligence of nature in every cell in your body, your microbe cells and your human cells. So innergeniushealth.com. I'm also on Instagram. Have some YouTube videos, and you can just look up my name, and I'm highly stalkable because my name is weird. So if you can spell my name, you can find me.
Awesome. And we will link everything in the show notes so people can also find the meditation. And thank you so much for having been here. It was an absolute pleasure. Thank you everybody.
And thank you for everything
Oh, go ahead.
I was going to say thank you for everything you do to help people. This is really important. This is a big deal. Thank you for serving what you serve.
Thank you. Thank you everyone for watching and listening. And we will be back shortly with another episode. See you then. Thank you for listening to this episode of the Sleep Like a Boss podcast with me, Anika Carroll. Be sure to follow and listen wherever you get your podcasts. We also invite you to play the game of sleep with us, if you haven't done so, at sleeplikeaboss.com. This podcast is for informational purposes only. We hope you enjoyed the episode. And until next time, and to a good night's sleep.